Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Well, in today's second hour, we are going to be having a chat about amendments to the Mental Health Act and the questions about rights and your freedoms when you are within the system under any kind of mental health concerns. And my guest today is Rochelle McCready, a lawyer who works with victims of mental health abuse from the authorities, and she's also worked with children who have also been victims of government interference, and she is a great champion of human rights. And today we will be discussing these issues, but we'll also be relating that back, which I always try to do, to more broader problems in our society, because I do think that these problems are simply endemic, simply indicative of a broader problem of how we've begun to accept the invasion of our rights from almost every direction. So with that, let me welcome Rochelle McCready to Truth News Radio Australia.
Hello, Harrowood. Nice to be on. Thank you.
Indeed, indeed. And it's been a while since we've had you on, too long indeed. And you have always been a great inspiration. A lot of people have commented on your expertise and your very lucid presentation. You're very, very clear in the way you explain things. And today, Rochelle, perhaps you can step us through what you consider to be the latest things of concern. I know we've had many conversations in the past about this, and there have been many, many changes to legislation over the years which have encroached on people's basic rights, people's basic freedoms. And it's just, it seems to be an endless encroachment that we're seeing by the authorities, and it seems to come from all different directions, doesn't it? I mean, it's quite extraordinary to sit back and see what's happening year by year with people's basic rights and freedoms being taken away.
I find it extraordinary, Harrowood. I find it terrible. And why I find things particularly bad in mental health is because psychiatry is not a science. And they don't have any objective biological tests. They don't have any scans or x-rays. They don't have any blood or urine tests. And what I find particularly disconcerting is that a lot of my colleagues and members of the bench will simply accept what psychologists say quite uncritically. Now, my background, before I became a lawyer, I did a degree in science. I did a Bachelor of Science with a major in pure maths. And I did a number of subjects in that science degree, including the philosophy of science and general philosophy. And I've come to the conclusion that most doctors would probably fail philosophy one because they seem to be incapable of grappling with logic. And certainly psychiatrists and psychologists seem to be particularly poor in this area. It's not true in every case. I think Professor David Healy is particularly good at coming to grips with these things. He's a very outspoken critic of his own profession, which is good, as most people who realise what's going on do become critics. Another person who I think deserves a great accolade is Colin Ross and Peter Breggin. They're very outspoken people, and they're telling people just how things are.
Yeah, just a point, I think, could it be that one of the reasons why these types of professionals have trouble with logic is that the profession that they are in is so heavily institutionalized, with the kind of like chain of authority and kind of the worship of authority built into it, that it is kind of schooled out of them to think for themselves? I mean, is there's an actual problem in the training and the culture that within which these professionals work?
Well, I think that could be it, but I've heard a lot of rubbish from people about climate change, and people are saying, yes, well, consensus. And I've said, well, look, consensus has got nothing to do with science.
Yes.
If there's consensus, there's no science. Science proceeds on the basis of experiment and observation, not on the basis of consensus. It doesn't matter how many people think there's no such thing as gravity. I mean, all you've got to do is drop something. there's gravity, you're wrong. But I think there's a big difference between real science and pseudoscience. In real science, what happens is that observation or experimentation or data will always trump theory. If we have a hypothesis that X is the case and we conduct an experiment, we see that Y is the case, and then X is no longer the case, and that's the end of it. But unfortunately, what psychology and psychiatry do is when there's a conflict between theory and data, is they go with the theory. It's referred to colloquially as cherry picking over the evidence, but this has disastrous ramifications for people's rights, and it ends up in just unadulterated slavery for people and lifetimes of misery.
The terrible
thing is that people, I was at a magistrate's hearing, this is before magistrates were gotten rid of under the Mental Health Act, and the psychiatrist said, well, people who have those conditions have chemical imbalances in the brain. I said, but there's no test for brain biochemistry, doctor. And he said, well, yes, there is. I mean, we look at people's blood, and I said, well, blood hormones in the bloodstream will not tell you anything about what's going on in the brain. It's just an assertion. You can't tell what's going on in the brain unless you insert some kind of probe into the brain, and if you do that, you induce trauma. And, of course, you don't know the biochemical status of the brain before you induce the trauma. So it's a completely untestable hypothesis. But the magistrate accepted what the psychiatrist said.
Extraordinary.
Oh, it is fraudulent. But, you know, I think the problem is that a lot of lawyers come from a non-science background and they're very uncritical. And I think people are taught to be uncritical. And I think a lot of people are right brain dominant. And I think they're taught not to develop their left brains. I think a lot of women are taught not to develop their left brains and just go with girly things like history and English and nursing and stuff like that, not really think analytically.
Can I just ask you from a more sort of philosophical perspective, Rochelle, do you go with the idea that mental illness itself is a myth? I mean, there have been some more hardline, more extreme positions taken. For example, I'm thinking of Thomas Zatz, who died just a couple of years ago, who was very famous, and a lot of his material is actually on YouTube. He's actually quite an interesting fellow, and you can check that out if you're listening to this. And he was very adamant throughout his whole life, right up to his mid-90s, that there was no such thing as mental illness. I'm not sure if I totally agree with him, because I do think that people who are suffering from severe psychosis do appear to be not well. They do, and I've met quite a lot of people who are diagnosed schizophrenic, and I know they've probably been mistreated. I know they probably shouldn't have been on the drugs they've been on, but these people do appear not to be well. I mean, what do you consider? I mean, is mental illness real? Are we sometimes sick via, you know, our delusions or something that's going on in our mental state?
Oh, totally. There is such a thing. People do behave in irrational and dangerous ways on occasions, and I think that people do need to be restrained, often for the safety of others and for their own safety. But it's one thing to say, well, their behaviour is irrational, and it's entirely another to say that they should be forced to take drugs that have serious side effects like brain damage, obesity, diabetes, akathisia, homicidal and suicidal ideation, and tardive dyskinesia. When you simply can't justify this, when you realise that there are no objective tests for diagnosing mental illness, the problem is that I think it's going to become worse. Because now what's happened is that the New South Wales Mental Health Act has been amended by the Mental Health Amendment Statutory Review Act of 2014, and this will commence on a day to be proclaimed by the Governor. It hasn't commenced as yet, but what's happening now is that before a psychiatrist It took two doctors to detain someone, and they certainly made mistakes about whether people had mental illnesses or not. It's certainly not uncommon for doctors and psychiatrists to misdiagnose medical conditions as mental illnesses. Over 50% of the people I've represented under the Mental Health Act have had readily diagnosable medical conditions that could have been picked up. And they've been misdiagnosed as psychiatric conditions. That's part of it. But what's going to happen now is instead of having two doctors examine a person, one of whom has to be a psychiatrist, in order for them to be detained involuntarily under the Act, they're going to have these people called accredited persons. Now, accredited person is a suitably qualified, experienced mental health practitioner, such as a nurse, psychologist or social worker, who's appointed by the Director General or the Ministry of Health. And they can write Schedule 1 certificates. Now, I'm not saying all nurses are stupid, but my father died from cancer in 1977, and when he had 2 weeks to live, a nurse came into the terminal ward and snatched his cigarettes and lighter away from him. And I said, "Why are you doing that?" And she said, "Because they're bad for his health." I said, "Well, it's a bit late for that, isn't it?" Totally stupid behaviour, and nurses deliberately withheld painkillers from my father, even though the doctor said he could have them because they were concerned that he might become a drug addict, as though it would matter when somebody's dying. But anyway, I mean, there are some people who certainly can't think, and I think probably psychiatric nursing attracts people who are simply prepared to go along with dogma because there's no science. So I think that's a problem. But I think that also there's a thing called a Martha Mitchell effect, which is where a psychiatrist or a psychologist or other mental health clinician mistakes a patient's perception of real events as delusional and misdiagnoses accordingly. Now, I've got some examples of this. I can cite a case where a young guy was put on, where a friend of mine, and this is the Martha Mitchell effect, where a friend of mine in England was scheduled under the Mental Health Act. He was on a river with some fishermen. He was talking to them and a large helicopter appeared overhead and it was flying around the power lines and they were trapped under the bridge by the helicopter for a period of an hour. And when they emerged, they felt absolutely ghastly. They had headaches and toothaches, and it's probably due to fluctuations in air pressure and the infernal noise the things make.
Yes.
And he complained about it. And his wife, who wanted to get rid of him, claimed that he said the helicopter had microwaved him. And she reported this to somebody who's the equivalent of an accredited person, and they duly wrote down that he had a persecution complex. And they said, "We need to take you away." And he said, "Well, I've got to be in court. You know, my wife was involved in an accident with a lorry driver."
Yeah.
And this gentleman very kindly wrote down that the bloke believed that the lorry driver who ran into his wife's car was working for the Secret Service. He never said anything of the sort. And also he said, "Well, I've got to go. I'm going hiking with this professor of linguistics."
Sorry, we shall have to interrupt. We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this very short break. Don't go away. Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Herewood Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And I'm talking to my guest, Rochelle McCready, a lawyer who works to help people who have problems with the authorities in the areas of mental health and also with child protection. Now, the story you were just recounting there, Rochelle.
Yeah, stop. I'm not doing I'm not doing any children's court work anymore.
Okay.
I deal with criminal law and human rights matters,
okay.
Administrative law and coronial law now, mainly Herald. Anyway.
Excellent. Yeah. Do continue.
Right. What happened with this guy was he mentioned that he was going hiking with a professor of linguistics, and the bloke wrote down that he was delusional. Anyway, my friend notified the professor of linguistics and he duly sent an email saying it's perfectly true, we are going hiking. And the interesting thing is that these people refused to look at any of the evidence that would have that was exculpatory, anything that would have shown that my client wasn't talking rubbish. So they didn't want to confound their opinions with facts. They'd made a decision that he was delusional and that was the end of it. And they dragged him off to a psychiatric hospital. They forced him to take Risperdal, which made him, or risperidone, which made him suicidal. And he complained about it. And they said, well, look, we can give you another drug with it. And they forced him to take Epilum. And unfortunately, he sustained neurological damage. He's still recovering from the experience. So that's not good. But I've got a couple of examples of where medical conditions were diagnosed as psychiatric complaints. Now, these are readily verifiable medical conditions. One was with a young man who had a problem with his retina. What I think happened is that pieces of the retina broke off and he was seeing disc-like objects. And he said he was seeing flying saucers. And this was sufficient to get him diagnosed as barking mad. But what actually was the case was that he had this condition of the retina. Now, that could have been readily identified, but he was forcibly incarcerated and forced to take psychiatric drugs because it was said that he was suffering from visual hallucinations. Now, visual hallucinations are not indicators of psychosis. That was established in 1971 that the source of visual hallucinations are investigated, and I think it's 98% of them were found to be of neurological cause. But people can get visual hallucinations through eyesight problems. But here we have psychiatrists and psychologists wanting to say that, you know, if somebody's got double vision, then they're psychotic because they're seeing things that aren't there. So this is very, very bothersome. Anyway, that's one case. Now, there was another case where a young man was working on a government-sponsored project and he became very sick. He was forced to work in 40-degree heat without a hat. And he said to the supervisor, look, I need to go home. And the supervisor said, you're not going home. And tomorrow you have to go and see a clinical psychologist. He said, look, I'm seeing things that aren't there. He said, you have to see a psychologist tomorrow. Anyways, he went in to see a psychologist. He said to the psychologist, look, I'm as sick as a dog. I need to go home. I'm seeing things. I know they're not there. So the bastard of a psychologist phoned the police and had him carted off to a psychiatric hospital. What was wrong with the young man is that he had heat stroke and infectious hepatitis, but he was incarcerated in a psychiatric facility, slam dunk with heavy doses of psychiatric drugs and put in the acute ward, and he ended up getting tardive dyskinesia. This is just inexcusable.
This is shocking. No, thought I couldn't be shocked anymore, but that's really quite incredible. Are these recent cases? Can you just get...
They're fairly recent.
Really?
I've got a person case that I'll tell you people about. But so the real danger is there was a premier suggestion of mental illness. So if people say a person's mad, these people won't bother to look any further. They won't bother to look for medical conditions. Now, this has been empirically demonstrated in two studies, the Rosenhan study and the Tamerlan experiment. And, you know, when people were told in the Tamerlan experiment that this bloke who, a bunch of psychiatrists put a script together for a normal man and some clinical psychologist helped coaching an actor so he had no quirks, and it was all filmed and the film was shown to a bunch of psychiatrists who were told that the man looked neurotic, but he was actually psychotic, and all of them found him to be psychotic, even though he didn't manifest any of the symptoms of psychosis. So who's got visual hallucinations? Anyway, when it was shown to a second group of psychiatrists who weren't told anything, none of them found him to be psychotic. So there's a real danger of a premier suggestion. And I think it's very, very dangerous to let psychologists say, well, somebody's barking mad, because people who should know better are not going to look for medical causes. Now, that's one of the things that is a problem. The Rosenhan experiment was a thing with pseudo-patients, and that's one of the problems. Now, I can cite a personal example of something that happens. I mean, this is something that happened a short time, or not all that long ago, to me. And this is how dangerous accredited persons can actually be. I was at a party and I was talking to a lady about metadata, and both of us were suitably horrified by metadata. And anyway, a clinical psychologist came up and introduced himself, and the lady said to me, well, look, I'm horrified by metadata, and I think it's dreadful that ASIO are going to be allowed to snoop everyone's emails, phone conversations, hard drives, and keep data for 2 years. That was a proposal at the time. Yes. And she said, well, I've never come across anyone yet who's actually had any evidence of spying. And I said, well, you've just met your first person. I said, I had a problem with my internet speed, and I complained to my ISP. I got put through to technical support. And the person to whom I spoke, he said, gee, Rochelle, he said, somebody's uploading yards of data from your hard drive. He said, they're really sucking up data. And I said, what? And he said, so you don't know about this? I said, no. And he said, all right, well, he said, you've got a serious security problem. Okay. And I said, right. And anyway, I talked to a network engineer, a friend of mine, and we both had a look at the usage records, and sure enough, there it was. And the network engineer said, gee, somebody's been busy with your information, Rochelle. They've been vacuuming it up at a frantic rate. And this clinical psychologist then said to me, he said, look, excuse me, he said, do you think you could have a persecution complex?
Really? Straight off? That was straight the response? Off.
And he said, because you seem to think that the government's persecuting you. And I said, no, do you think you've got a Martha Mitchell syndrome?
Mm.
Anyway, this lady said to me, well, what did you do about it? And I said, well, I resolved there and then that I would abandon Microsoft and I would go over to Linux. And I said, I decided to build my own computer. So I said, I talked to my network engineer friend, and he's very, very kind and helpful. And I said to him, listen, mate, I'd like to build a computer. Now, I want to make sure I use components that don't have any sort of backdoor capacity for, you know, spy agencies, because I'm under a massive obligation to keep confidential information that clients give me. I can't disclose this to third parties without authorisation. And this psychologist, he said, you know, I just think you're being paranoid. I mean, what's the problem? And I said, well, if I make unauthorised disclosures to third parties, I can be rubbed out, but some bloody inquisitive bureaucrat can snoop my hard drive and tell other people. Now, in America, what the NSA was doing is they were snooping lawyers' hard drives and leaking confidential information to the police in criminal matters. It's the last thing you want. So yes. What I did was I got these components together and I said to this bloke, now I'd like to put the computer together myself. I said, please only intervene if I go to do something stupid or if there's a much easier way of doing it. And so he was very good, and we sort of put it together in about a day. I did 98% of it. And she said to me, you know, like, it must be very expensive. And I said, well, it wasn't expensive if you put it together yourself. I said, it saved about $500. And I said, the advantage of putting it together is you know what's going in, and also it's a good learning experience. And this bloke, a clinical psychologist, then said to me, he said, do you think you could have Asperger's syndrome? I mean, bloody Asperger's syndrome, we should build a computer.
Yeah, the mentality of the gatekeepers, like your friend there, is something that that is well worth understanding. It is a part of the problem of our society. We are going to break and we'll be right back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, talking to Rochelle McCready. Stand by. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And we're talking about mental illness. We're talking about the ways in which people can be locked up simply at the say-so of what's called an accredited person, and sometimes really just on the hearsay of perhaps an employer, as in the case you outlined there of the young man who was forced to work in the hot sun. And can I just get you, Rochelle, to repeat, what is the definition of an accredited person as such?
Okay, I'll just get it. But it does still need a doctor, Harold. I mean, it's not just an accredited person, but they've replaced one of the doctors with an accredited person if it's not convenient to get two doctors. An accredited person is a suitably qualified and experienced mental health practitioner, such as a nurse, psychologist or social worker, who is appointed by the Director General of the Ministry of Health to write Schedule 1 certificates. So the criteria for locking someone up is that they pose a risk of serious harm to themselves or others. Now, there's empirical evidence cited by Bruce Ennis that when psychiatrists said that people, like when they say somebody poses a risk of serious harm to other people, they're dangerous, the probability of them getting it right is less than 1%. Conversely, the probability of them getting it wrong is greater than 99%, you know, because all probabilities have to add up to one. So it's pretty disconcerting that people can lose their liberty. And it wouldn't be perhaps so bad if there was consistency, but you can have five different psychiatrists, one patient, and five different diagnoses. So it's not like real science.
And in a society where increasingly, we are seeing kind of a division in our society between people who are starting to wake up to all of the injustices and the lying that is going on from the authorities on so many topics. In such a climate, it is actually quite natural to be a little paranoid. I mean, I think it's actually in some cases healthy to be paranoid when there's good reason for it. But of course, that immediately then becomes a reason why you might be considered mentally ill, does it not?
Yes. I mean, there's actually a new mental illness called mistrust of government. Now, I've raised this point before. The leading cause of unnatural death during the 20th century was government. You know, governments killed between 262 million and 300 million people, and none of those deaths were combatant. So why the hell would you trust the government? And when I was accused of being paranoid about this thing, I mean, you know, the NSA were vacuuming up data from everyone. They were sort of spying on Angela Merkel's private telephone conversations. They sort of kept over records of over 200 million conversations in France. I mean, they're keeping records of people's emails. But why the hell wouldn't you think that the government was interested? And, I mean, the reason why, there was a perfectly plausible reason why people would be interested in, like, breaking into my computer. I mean, my network engineer friend seemed to think it was a case of industrial espionage. But, you know, the guy just filtered out. The ISP told you that data was being vacuumed up, and the network engineer confirmed the same thing to you're imagining it. So it's not good. But anyway, there are some further changes that are bad to the Mental Health Act, and the other one is video conferencing. They can now video conference people and determine whether they're nuts on the basis of a video conference. And this is bad because videos will often miss subtle nuances in facial expressions. It's not the same as a face-to-face thing. And also I think it serves to further dehumanise people who are accused of being mentally ill. Now, you've got to realise they have fewer rights than criminals, because if you're accused of having committed a criminal offence, you have to be proved guilty beyond reasonable doubt. But if you're accused of being mentally ill, then you only have to be proven guilty beyond the balance of probabilities, which is certainly a lesser standard of proof. It's referred to as a civil standard. So I think that's dreadful. Also, I mean, there's a dreadful thing in the Mental Health Act that really allows tribunals to make rolling community treatment orders against people who are not mentally ill, provided that they perceive it to be in the person's best interests. Now, I read the amendments and I was sort of section 53 subsection 4 says that the tribunal may not make an order in respect of someone who's not mentally ill. What you've got, this sounds like, oh, good, you know, this is a refreshing change. But what you have to understand is that may is discretionary. It doesn't say they can't. And then when you go to section 53 subsection, to section 53 subsection 5, what that does is what section 53 subsection 4 gives on the one hand, section 53 subsection 5 takes, because it says when you're determining whether somebody's mentally ill, you're entitled to take into account whether they have a prior diagnosis of mental illness, whether they've complied with treatment in the past, and a number of factors. Now, if somebody's been misdiagnosed as having a mental illness, this will simply allow them to enslave someone forever and they'll never get off community treatment orders. And this is what frequently happens. A community treatment order is made against the person and before it expires, the agency will apply for another community treatment order and it just goes on and on and on. I actually got a client off a community treatment order and the poor lady had been on one for 23 years. She was put on one by her lovely brother who was a psychiatric nurse. She had a near-death experience and made the mistake of telling him about it, and the first thing he did was get her scheduled. It was a number of years ago, but I mean, she ended up getting off it.
It has a terrible effect on the health of people, doesn't it, when they're put on these drugs long term. I mean, I've known people, I have friends at the moment, and I see what happens to them. Their weight increases dramatically. They lose all the natural kind of responsiveness of being a normal person because the drugs clamp down on the dopamine system, don't they? So it is impossible to have a normal state of being when you're under those drugs.
Oh, well, they lower people's IQs. Peter Breggin's cited research on that. I mean, they make people obese. They'll get a person who is sort of fastidious about their hygiene and they'll just forget to bath or shower for weeks on end and stink.
And, of course, described as part of the... because they're mentally ill. Oh, well, they're like that because they're mentally ill. So it's a self-perpetuating cycle then, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, the drugs have induced this, and I mean, they make people fat, and they say, well, that's because people are eating sweets. But the drugs often do create cravings for sweets, and the manufacturers have admitted that. And something that's very interesting is that if you look at the MIMS, you'll find that risperidone can actually cause psychosis. I mean, so can quetiapine. These are drugs that can induce the very condition they're designed to treat. And the information about quetiapine has now been disguised, but they're capable of inducing psychosis. You get a terrible thing where adolescents do stupid things. They go out and they take various street drugs. They have no control, no way of knowing what the quality control is like or if there is any, and they can go temporarily mad. And so what these idiots do, unless they're very clever people, is they put them in psychiatric hospital and they slam dunk them with heavy doses of antipsychotics. Now, a psychiatrist explained to me that the antipsychotics attack the same part of the brain as street drugs. So it's like trying to treat an alcoholic who's been drinking sweet sherry with gin or whiskey or bitter or something. I mean, they're all alcohol. What they need to do is to be detoxified, not to be given more of the same. So it effectively locks the conditions in. So that's something they do. So, I mean, it's just a lifetime of misery if people get misdiagnosed, unless they have the money to go to the Supreme Court. But even then, people do tend to be biased in favour of psychiatry. People just don't. A lot of lawyers, and not all judges, some Supreme Court judges are very, very clever, and they do see through this. But a lot of people, unfortunately, will take the view that doctor knows best and they're doctors and they wouldn't do anything irresponsible. Well, unfortunately, that's not the case. There's a provision now, there's a dreadful provision with ECT. Here we go, another break.
We're heading for break, yes, last break of the show. We will continue with that when we come back. I'd like to know more about ECT. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm talking to lawyer Rochelle McCready. We will be right back. Australia, and I'm talking to Rochelle McCready. Rochelle, yeah, do continue there about ECT. It's a topic that I'm always interested to know more about, horrific as it is.
Oh, ECT is dreadful. I mean, it does. Even the world's leading advocate of ECT, Harold Sackheim, has now admitted it causes brain damage and irreversible memory loss. And this has been categorically denied. It started being denied in the 70s when people became litigious, but a friend of mine is a forensic pathologist, and he confirmed what Russian medical text has stated. When he's done autopsies on the brains of people who've had ECT, he's been able to recognise it. He said you find petechial hemorrhages. These are pinpoint hemorrhages clustered around the current, electrode sites and following the current path. So it does do damage. But anyway, there are provisions in the Act now for, children under 16 have been able to be given ECT under the Act prior to the amendments, but now they can be given ECT without the benefit of legal representation if the tribunal decides that it's in their best interest not to be legally represented. When honestly, they're children, they've got developing brains, they're going to have an irreversible and incredibly damaging treatment forced on them, and it's going to can happen now without ECT. There's a study called, there's research, Avery and Winokur, which is often cited to state that ECT prevents suicide, and this is a complete misquotation. Avery and Winokur didn't say that it prevented suicide. They said it was more effective than ineffective treatment with antidepressants. Well, antidepressants don't even get over placebo effect in treating depression. I mean, if people are depressed, I mean, one thing that they can do is take responsibility for their own lives. They need to get up early in the morning and shower and put on clean clothes and go for a walk for half an hour at sunrise. I mean, another thing that people can do is that medical research shows that depression is correlated with a bad diet and a sluggish digestive system.
Can I just interject? I just want to say something because this is a topic that I've had many debates on with many people, and I have advocated similar arguments to what you're saying now. I have been decried on Facebook in discussions. I have been told to shut up, and this is from people who are not medical people. They're just ordinary people. A lot of them are on medications, defending their own choices, right, against any criticism. But I have been told to shut up. I have been told I'm an idiot. I know nothing about it. I do not have the right to an opinion because I'm not an expert. And, you know, let people who know about it make the decisions. And then they claim to know far more about it than me. And they say, what you don't understand, Harewood, is that depression is an illness and some people need to take their medicine. And stop telling people to just pull themselves together. Stop trying to pretend that it's not a real sickness, because by doing so, you're putting us down. And they get incredibly defensive about it. But they also get quite aggressive at any suggestion that depression is not an illness akin to diabetes, which just needs the correct medicine to correct the imbalance. They are absolutely brainwashed 100% into that belief system. And if you question it, you are treated like a Holocaust denier.
Oh, yeah, I know. But, I mean, of course, there's no evidence that depression is caused by any sort of chemical imbalance. There's no evidence whatsoever. The medical evidence is that depression starts in the duodenum, and it starts when people's digestive system is sluggish. They're eating junk food. They get a coating of plaque. And one thing that, I mean, I used to take castor oil to get rid of migraines to detox. And that will certainly remove the coating of plaque from people's gastrointestinal tracts. I mean, I would suggest that if people really want to get rid of depression, don't go off their antidepressants unless they do so under medical supervision. But if you're depressed about something, try taking 50 mils of castor oil with the juice of a lemon on an empty stomach. And I'll tell you what, by the time you get over the effects of that, you'll have forgotten about what was bothering you in the first place. But your depression will have gone because it just cleans out the digestive system. You need to eat a better diet and not eat rubbish, not eat junk food. But, I mean, that's been known about for thousands of years. Herewood, one thing I would like to talk about is that, just before I leave this topic of children, is that, you know, the tribunal won't be looking at the problems with diagnosis. They'll just sort of be ticking things off. And, you know, like this wouldn't, like WASH for standard medicine, I mean, why should it WASH for psychiatry? So there should be the same onerous standards, or rigorous standards, I should say. Now, there's a provision now, if voluntary patients decide they want to cut loose, they can be involuntarily detained until it's determined whether they should be kept in there as an involuntary patient. Of course, this cuts right across informed consent.
Indeed.
Now, what I really think people should be told is what to do if a mental health crisis team turns up at their door. This advice doesn't refer to a situation where somebody has a prior psychiatric history or is subject to a community treatment order. But what I'm talking about is if some bastard out there decides they hate you and they decide that you're nuts and need scheduling. So what if a mental health crisis team turns up at your door and they say, you know, is so-and-so there, you're entitled to ask who wants to know and why. And if they identify themselves as a mental health crisis team, you must understand that they have no lawful right of entry to your premises unless they're accompanied by the police. So do not let them in and do not do what a chap with whom I had dealings under the Mental Health Act a few years ago did step outside and talk to them because they just collared him and took him off to a psychiatric facility. So you don't leave the premises while they're present because they're likely to grab you if you step outside. And what will happen is they will go away and they'll get the police. Now, what you should really do is get a lawyer, and you need to video this conversation with them. You know, the minute they say they're a mental health crisis team, on goes the video camera. And make sure you can upload those videos to the cloud. You know, have your phone on data mode so that it can be uploaded to something like Dropbox or Google Docs, because I'll tell you what, if people are taken into custody in a psychiatric facility, what will almost certainly happen is that mental health nurses will go through their phones and delete the footage. So this footage is going to be very important if people need to establish that they're not nuts. So because people twist things and misrepresent things. I mean, I've seen stuff like, you know, a patient signalling a taxi and mental health nurses will write down patients seen on street corner waving arms about and calling out in an excited fashion when they were calling out taxi, you know. But anyway, I mean, so you don't leave the premises. Now, they'll turn up with the police, and you really should be, you should have a lawyer there, and you need witnesses. Have as many witnesses there as you can and make sure they're people who'll stand up and be counted. Now, you need to, when you're interviewed by these mental health people, you need to video two people. One is yourself answering the questions, and two is the person who's asking you. And you need to make sure that you keep this raw footage, and you need to make sure that it's uploaded very quickly in case your phone's grabbed and it's deleted. Now, right, you send it to Dropbox. Now, you should consider installing OpenWatch on your phone. Now, there appears to be a problem with the home page on OpenWatch, so you need to go to the apps page and do it from there. Anyway, so now, what are we going to do if we want to get rid of those bad laws? You see, what's happening now is people are voting in parties and we get a four-year tyranny. And they don't tell people they're going to do those things.
Well, see, people don't believe that they would ever use these laws in a purely oppressive way. People trust that if you give the government these powers, that they will only use the powers responsibly. And there is a lack of appreciation of history, a lack of understanding. I mean, look what happened in Nazi Germany. In Nazi Germany, they immediately enacted the eugenics laws, which were actually considered to be humanitarian around the world. I mean, they weren't just in Germany. The eugenics laws were in America and Canada and a few other countries. And many leading humanitarians thought that it was fine to sterilize mentally ill, didn't they?
Oh, they did. Yes, they did some horrific things. I mean, some horrific experiments were actually conducted in Canada. This is after the war by a CIA psychiatrist called Ewan Cameron. And one of the people who's brought this to light is a psychiatrist called Colin Ross, to whom I've spoken on the phone. He's a very, very nice person, and he's put up YouTube videos and he's told people the truth. But I've actually had people express the view that he was nuts, and people have said to him, Colin, those things didn't happen. Well, this dreadful Cameron inserted a transistor into the brain of an 11-year-old boy. Colin Ross told me this.
Yeah.
And when he told people, they said, oh, look, Colin, I think you're mad. And he showed them the declassified document, you know, there on letterhead. And people just will not accept this. I've told people things. I've said governments are more likely to kill you than anyone else. And they've said, well, I don't believe it. And I say, well, you go and Google the word democide and see what you see. And they still won't accept it.
Yes, and it's the government funding that's given sometimes to private hospitals, like I'm thinking of Chelmsford in Australia, a great scandal there that happened, that enable psychopaths to act out their wild fantasies.
Yeah, I've just got one more thing to say about these things before we leave. Can
Indeed.
I say it, Harold?
Yeah, yes, try and get it in quick. Thanks.
All right. Well, what one thing is that how to get bad laws is vote for micro parties in the upper house. The good thing about these amendments to the Mental Health Act is they decline to reintroduce psychosurgery to New South Wales. Thank goodness for that, because the government task force wanted it reintroduced.
We are at the end of the hour. Terribly sorry, Rochelle. Thanks for that. That was really important information. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. That's the end of our show for the week. Rochelle, we will have you back on to discuss these in more detail at a future point. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Harold. Thanks for having me on.
Truth News Radio Australia signing out.